Ladies and gentlemen, are you ready for Banal of America
of America Audio with your host, Tim Banal.
No commercials, no subscriptions, no network, no rules, and at the end of the day, my friends, no comparison. Welcome to another edition of BOA Audio Season 9. I am still in the tiny room, so bear with me. Greg and Dana don't know about the tiny room, but I've been forced to move to practically like a dollhouse to broadcast the show from, so I'm still in the dollhouse, folks, but thankfully I'm not in the doghouse, because we've got an awesome pair of guests tonight. How about that segue? I'm talking about Dana Matthews and Greg Newkirk. They are paranormal adventurers. They go around and get into trouble, essentially, in this weird world of high strangeness, and I had the pleasure of hearing them on Coast to Coast back in October or so, and just really enjoyed listening to them, and I was like, I would love to talk to them. And they seem to, more than a lot of people in this field, they really seem to get it. And what I mean by that is they don't take this too seriously, but they also respect it. And I think that's kind of the key to surviving in all of this, really. You know, if you don't have a sense of humor about the paranormal and the strange, you're doomed to go down a very scary rabbit hole. So thankfully, these folks are kind of just standing on the edge of the rabbit hole, peering down and maybe rappelling in with some rope or something and pulling themselves back out. So it's they have quite the view on all this. And what I like about it, too, is they go out and do shit. They go out and do stuff, which is awesome, because I wish I could go out and do stuff. And they get into some cool adventures. So it's going to be a fun conversation, I think. Greg and Dana, welcome to BOA Audio.
Hello.
Hey, thanks for having us, man.
Oh, my pleasure, man. My pleasure. Like I said, I really have enjoyed listening to you guys on Coast, so I figured let's get them on Banal of America, because we can really cut loose and have a fun conversation. So we do the bio, the background to start it out. Ladies first, Dana, tell us about you, your background. Who is Dana Matthews? And, of course, spoiler alert, I guess, folks, Dana and Greg are married, so we'll do sort of like
what did we say?
Big spoiler.
What did we say? That was the one thing you weren't supposed to talk about.
I'm glad I asked you before the show started.
I guess, I don't know. I've been interested in the paranormal for pretty much my whole life, I guess, like most people. But I've been actively participating in paranormal adventure, as we like to call it, since probably 2001. And really, for the first couple of years, it was sort of just ghosts and hauntings and all that kind of stuff. And eventually, my curiosity sort of opened up, and it started with Bigfoot, and we just went from there. And
hey, listen, you're glossing over a big part of your
past. I'm doing that on purpose.
Go ahead.
In 2003, I hosted a very terrible Canadian television show that will rename.
What was the name?
Name.
It's The Girly Ghost Hunters. It's available on Hulu.
Oh, nice.
Look it up.
Even in
America?
Even in America.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
It sucks big time.
Really? I remember hearing about The Girly Ghost Hunters, and I was like, what is this shit? This is weird.
Yeah.
I actually thought it was a really good idea, though.
For the most part, it was just my friends and I, and we got to travel around to all these really cool haunted places in Canada and investigate them. And
it was out a full year before Ghost
Hunters.
No,
it wasn't. It was 6 months.
Oh, 6 months.
Yeah, we did.
But you beat them to air. You beat Ghost Hunters to air.
Yeah, and they're still going today. We had that one glorious season. So Yeah. Greg,
that's a sign of quality, though. Aren't the best shows, you know, they go off the air after like one or two seasons and everyone's like,
that's
bring
true.
Them back. So.
No one wants this.
No.
Just a fun,
especially
a fun
you.
Point is when you are watching it on Hulu, if you are watching it on Hulu, there's a lot of really fun Facebook comments that people have left over
oh,
there.
Oh, that's mean.
At the bottom that you can read through. And
that's mean.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh, that so, must be. Yeah.
Here we go.
The life of a Canadian television star.
But yeah, from there, Greg and I co-founded what was at the time Who Forded and became
yep.
Week and Weird and
yep.
Planet Weird, and we've been traveling around and
chasing monsters
ever since.
I mean, my background's pretty much the same thing. I've just never been on TV, so it's not quite as interesting. I know. So yeah,
so you're
I mean,
not on Hulu
I'll
at all.
Spare you the. But not on Hulu at all, no. I will spare you the extensive background and just say I've been a weirdo for a very long time. And, you know, now I'm in a position where I can go out and actually chase monsters for real and do it any chance I can.
Nice. Well, well, since you didn't tell me much about your background, Greg, I'm going to kind of presume it's... I'm going to assume
the
charges
it's
were dropped.
They were. Actually, what's funny is Dana and I actually met because we ran rival ghost hunting websites when we were kids. And hated each other.
Back in the GeoCities days.
Back in the GeoCities days when everything was justified to the left, all the pictures and everything. He's
like, oh, nice.
Automatic builder. Yeah, it was terrible. Dancing, skeleton gifs,
yeah.
And that kind of thing.
Love that
guy. Oh, yeah.
We hated
glitter,
each other for
glitter everywhere.
Yep.
Oh, glitter. Yeah, blingy.
Yes, that's what
I think
it was.
That came along a little later,
it
though, didn't it?
It was way later.
Well,
it was
later.
Like on
that
MySpace,
was
MySpace or something.
Yeah.
Right. We had those, too. The embarrassing MySpace photos are still out there somewhere. But, yeah, we
sure.
hated each other.
Sure.
Dana got a TV show. Me and my friends got upset, so we built an exact replica of their website with us dressed in drag, put all of their visitors on our website instead, and hated each other for 7 years. And then I essentially stalked Dana until she married me, and... Here we are.
Wow. Awesome. 7 years, really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Jesus.
We've been together how long now?
8, 9?
8 or 9, something mm-hmm. like that.
Wow.
Doesn't matter.
Wow.
A lot of years.
It's a paranormal love story. Now, how about this? Okay, so you didn't – this is the setup that I was getting to for the question. I'm going to make you really think here, you two, so bear with me.
Okay.
What I found interesting just now listening to your bio, your background is, and Dana kind of alluded to it, is that you started out in the ghost realm and right when it kind of exploded. So, you know, like you said, you were in it for a while and you're all mixed up in the ghost thing. So a lot of people, they get into their niche and they just stay there and they never get out of it. So I guess what inspired you to evolve out of ghost hunting? You know, you still dip your toe or whatever in it, you're still part of it, I guess you'd say. It's like Dylan going electric,
sure.
You know, you didn't stop playing music. So it's like, you know, what made you guys expand and evolve, as I said, you know, into monsters and you know, this traveling museum of curios and all this stuff that you're doing now?
It was the natural progression, I think, of where we were headed. I think that, you know, the explosion of the ghost hunting community around that time helped kind of push us into some other stuff. I mean, if you've got 10 ghost hunting teams in the same town and they're all looking for the same things at the same places, there's really no need for it. So we decided we wanted to look into some stuff that people around us weren't looking into. And that kind of pushed us into some even weirder stuff.
Yeah, that certainly sounds like it. Yeah. Well, I think after like years and years and years in the ghost thing, how much further can you take it anyway? We've talked about this on the show before. It's like...
Right.
How much evidence can you accumulate until you reach some kind of critical mass where you're like, I've got 1,000 EVPs, dude. Enough's enough.
Right.
What am I going to do?
Well, I think the interesting thing is the reason that there's kind of this weird ceiling that no one can get across is because, like you said, people kind of get into their niche and they go, well, I know that ghosts are real, but those guys who believe in UFOs, those guys are nuts. And then the UFO guys are like, those guys who believe in Bigfoot are nuts. And they don't talk to each other, and they don't share evidence and things like that. Where I think if they did, they would come to the point where they realize that all of this stuff is connected.
Mm-hmm.
All connected somehow in a way that we don't really understand yet, but there's so many threads that wind into these different, you know, these different areas. But we don't see them as much because people refuse to work outside their comfort zone.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. And the weird part, too, is, like, if you talk to a lot of people, like, who are in this, I guess you could say. And I don't hate to delineate sort of, like, between the listeners and the guests and that kind of thing, but what I mean in a sense is, like, the people that I talk to say, like, the same thing, you know what I mean? We all sort of say the same thing, the people who are on the show. So it's like, who
mm-hmm.
but I've met people who are, like, ghost hunters, and I don't want to rip on them, but, you know, who are, like, they have no idea who somebody like Nick Redfern is or something like that.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like,
right.
How do you not know who these people who these other people are?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, we love ghost hunting. We love Bigfoot hunting. We love going after UFOs. We like to do all that kind of stuff. And there's lots of people in every one of these fields who's doing amazing work. But
mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, when it comes to actually, like, evolving and pushing any kind of, you know, paranormal research to any usable space, these people are going to have to learn to work together. Otherwise, you know, they're just never going to come to a conclusion.
Right.
Yeah, I think that we got to this point where we were sort of like, why? Let's explore all of it. Let's sort of open ourselves up to all of it and go out and meet people who are doing different things. And maybe there's something that we can learn from all of these people and from all of these different experiences.
Hmm. Well, it seems like you guys are doing a good job so far. Like I said, I really enjoy your stuff. Now, tell me about the goblin thing, because to me that seems like the most I don't know, titillating of all. It's so weird, and it's like, it's one thing to look for a Bigfoot or a UFO. I don't even know how you describe it. You know, at least they're mainstream or something. But goblins,
right.
Like,
mm-hmm.
Jesus, dude, like, I wouldn't, you know, why? Why are you going looking for a goblin in the first place? So tell me about this whole goblin thing that you guys have been, you know, since the fall.
Well, I think the word goblins kind of throws people off because they hear the word goblin and they're like, what? These people are full of crap.
Mm-hmm.
It's once you get over the fact that it's just a name that was given to some strange creature by the media,
right.
That just kind of stuck, you know, you realize that there's a lot of people who have seen something very strange in the same area for several years, and
mm-hmm.
some of them have given it different names. So, like,
yeah.
You've heard gobsows, holler goblins, all kinds of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So once you get past the name, you can kind of look at these cases. Well, what happened was several years ago, we got an email from this guy from Eastern Kentucky who claimed that these little creatures were coming out of a mine shaft on the edge of his property. He lived in a very rural part of Kentucky and said that they were scaring his children. They were coming up to their windows at night. They were looking inside his windows. They were stealing the kids' toys. And eventually
it
escalated to the point where he said they took his dog. They took his dog. And he found this mine shaft. And there were all these kids' toys and his tools and things like that. And he sent us pictures of these three-toed footprints, very strange footprints. They had dermal ridges on them. I mean, really, really weird stuff. They were, probably about 6 inches long or so.
Mm-hmm.
And the more we started looking into it, the more we were like, you know, this sounds a lot like the Hopkinsville Goblins case. From back in the 50s. And for people who aren't familiar, it was you know, still considered one of the best documented cases of potential extraterrestrial contact. This farmhouse in Hopkinsville, Kentucky, was besieged by little creatures that they nicknamed goblins. They were looking in their windows. These people shot at them. And it happened over the course of 2 days. The police got involved. People saw flying saucers crash, all kinds of
mm-hmm.
crazy stuff. But it was witnessed by so many people. It has so many similarities to what started happening in Eastern Kentucky. And it got to this point eventually where this guy's like, listen, I want you guys to come out. I want you to document this stuff. You can do whatever you want. Just don't use my name. I'm a doctor. I don't want people to know that this stuff's going on.
Right.
And then he sent us pictures of these things, which, you know, in true paranormal fashion are, you know, blurry and, you know, you can't really make out too many details, but it looks like these little pale creatures peeking around trees. And then he disappeared and we couldn't get anything else out of him. And it turned into this bizarre chase where we were trying to figure out where this guy's house was, and you know, people started emailing us that so other people said we're Men in Black, and it turned into this big bizarre thing.
Weird.
But where we've come to now is we've found all of these cases of similar encounters that have happened all up and down the Appalachian Trail. And they seem to coincide with the Mammoth Cave system. Hmm. So I have a feeling that there's something going on in the caves and around these areas that all these people have been seeing for 50, 60 years. They've all given them different names, so no one really realizes these are all connected. But there's something really happening, and we've been trying to figure out what. And it's just, I mean, the deeper we dig, the crazier it gets.
Now, because I couldn't pick a goblin out of a lineup from a gremlin or a gargoyle. So how do people describe this thing so people can kind of, or these things or whatever, you know, what do they look like so we can kind of get a mental picture, at least what the witnesses describe them.
Back during sort of the very first the Sutton case, they were described as being about 3 to 4 feet tall. They were very pale. They were bald. They had very large, kind of shiny black eyes. And the one thing that really made them stand out more than anything was that they had these, what they described as these gigantic ears. So they almost looked like, almost like elephant ears. They were very big and very strange. And the more recent cases, or the more recent stories, I guess, a majority of the descriptions are pretty similar, aside from one weird little detail, which is that the ears seem to have gone away, and that people today are seeing pretty much exactly the same thing, but without the large sort of ear-shaped things on the side of their heads, which is interesting.
Yeah,
I mean, that opens up a whole, you know, bunch of new questions about what potentially those things could have been, or, you know, like, how it relates to the new case.
Hmm. Makes me think that they, like, lived deeper underground a long time ago and have slowly been making their way to the surface. So, like, they evolved off those giant ears so they didn't have to hear as well. But who knows?
Mm-hmm.
One of the weird things that
I
thought was, like, if these things really were from a crashed spaceship, like they said in 1955, who's to say it wasn't part of a helmet?
Yeah, and I mean, like, one of the more interesting details, too, to the original case was that when the family were shooting at these creatures, they described hearing the sound of, like, tin cans, almost as if the bullets were sort of bouncing off of them, which maybe they were wearing some sort of weird suit or, like, you know
right.
what I mean? Like, that's always a possibility that they could have been wearing something to sort of protect themselves from the environment around them.
Now, this is from the 70s, right?
Stories. This is from 1955.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, yeah. So do you think? See, I'm having trouble reconciling maybe that these aliens would still be around in the area. So, but I'm confused.
Right.
So,
right.
Part of me just figures they're sort of like weird cave dwarves or something, cave hobbits or something like that.
They absolutely could be. Like we have no idea. Maybe the UFO crash that happened in 1955. The alleged UFO crash had nothing to do with the case, and maybe these things did come up out of the ground and have been living in caves. But it's strange that they saw a flying saucer that went down near a cave in Hopkinsville. That these creatures came to this farmhouse, and what's interesting, a detail that's often left out of the story that was told to us by Geraldine. Who is the daughter of Lucky Sutton, who actually shot at these creatures. She said her grandmother said she didn't think they were there to cause anyone any harm. They actually approached the farmhouse with their hands in the air. So they had their arms in the air, and they still shot at them because they were terrified, and these things ran off.
Yeah,
so,
that makes sense.
You know,
yeah.
it's a lot of strange coincidences that this happened around the Mammoth Cave system, and all of these sightings that have happened in the, you know, 50, 60 years since are happening around the Mammoth Cave system. So,
which spans, like, pretty much all of Kentucky.
Oh, yeah, it's the largest cave system in the world.
Yeah.
It's the largest cave system in the world.
And so
and
I presume then, since it's so big, nobody can, like, no one really goes. People go in, but it's like no one really goes in. You know what I mean?
Oh, I mean, largely unexplored.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there must be miles and miles and miles of cave systems in there that we could never even imagine are there. I mean, and if something, you know, for the sake of, you know, the conversation, if something was living there, it would be sort of the perfect little highway for it to sort of cruise around the state, basically, pretty much undetected.
Yeah, especially if you knew where you were going, you know,
mm-hmm.
and lived in there. You'd be adept at getting through these caves and shit, you know.
There's a goblin highway right underneath Kentucky.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. That's weird. That's a weird story, yeah. Yeah, I've heard a little
bit
about that
thing.
So you can't find this doctor. He just bailed on you after sending the pictures.
Oh, I mean, here's what's interesting. We finally, late last year, we finally said, you know what, screw it. We live in Cincinnati now. When we started investigating the case, we were living in Canada. So now that we're in Cincinnati, we're basically Kentucky. We said, screw it. We're 3-4 hours away. Let's go to this town, and we'll start asking around. And we went to this town, and I took the pictures that were sent to us. And, I mean, honestly, this place, it's in the middle of nowhere. There's one gas station that doubles as the grocery store. There's no cell phone service. It's in the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when we showed up, I start waving these pictures around. And within half an hour, you know, there's 2 dozen people who have met at this place to tell us stories. People
mm-hmm.
have seen these things.
It was interesting because people didn't know who the person was. They had no, you know, they were like, we don't know who this doctor is, but we can tell you that these photos aren't, this is normal here. We find stuff like this all the time. And they basically were able to tell us all of these stories about experiences that they've had throughout the years and their grandparents have had forever. That sort of, I mean, completely mirrored all of the evidence that we had collected over the past couple of years, which was really interesting.
People recognize the footprints. And the strangest part, this is the strangest part, and this is stuff that no one knows. We've never done an update to this yet, so no one knows any of this yet.
Nice.
But
scoop.
So there's this guy starts saying that, you know, a year or two ago they saw a giant flying saucer. They use the words flying saucer. Above their town, they said it was bigger than a jumbo jet, perfectly round, that hovered there for 4 hours. Other people were coming in to verify the story, and everyone was nodding, and they said the government came in the following day and said, what you guys saw was a satellite, and it's no big deal. And this guy said, listen, I know that I'm not an educated man, but I'll tell you right now, that wasn't a satellite. And the next day, they printed pictures of something looks completely different in the newspaper.
Jeez, this was a couple of years ago.
So something's going on. Yeah, just a few years ago. Something's
weird.
Happening there. But they say the police won't come. The police won't take them seriously. No one will pay any attention. And, you know, they don't have cell phone service or anything. And I'm sure that their internet access is limited. So this town is there's weird stuff happening. And they want to get to the bottom of it. I mean, everyone was offering us four-wheel drive vehicles to get up to the old mines.
Yeah.
I mean, really, really bizarre. And we were only there for 4 or 5 hours. We just took a day trip.
My God. Well, maybe some of these Bigfoot hunters should change professions and get the hell over to Kentucky or something.
Yeah, right. Well, they've seen them there, too.
Go where the action is. My God. That's crazy, dude. That's really crazy. But it makes sense in a way. I mean, they're kind of like sequestered from the world. So
right. Yeah, it's
right.
So isolated.
Yeah. Very, very weird.
Perfect
man.
Place.
Yeah, exactly. It's like these whatever these creatures are, they want to be sequestered from the world too. So they're perfectly happy there. So it makes perfect sense that they'd all live together in a in a little bubble. Oh man. So now, that kind of brings up a general point of just, like, how you guys go – how do you decide what to go and check out, you know? Because you've done other stuff. You've gone on a Bigfoot hunt. You did this UFO how to become an abductee thing. I presume that was sort of an adventure you went on. How do you decide what kind of stuff you're going to do? Because I presume at this point you get a lot of – like, I don't know why the hell this doctor guy was writing to you in the first place. Thank God people like that don't write to me. Because I would, like, freak out. So, like, I presume you get all kinds of crazy emails from people that are like, you got to come down here. My dog just recited the book of Revelations. And you're like, oh, I don't know if I can.
I would definitely go to that.
For sure. Absolutely.
So how
it's
do you
really
decide
just comes
what,
down.
What you're going to check out? I kind of want to see that dog now too.
We're bored easily, so you know, we want to do things that that are different. We want to do things that are actually different. It's like I said earlier, you know, if there's hundreds, if not thousands, of other teams out there who are investigating the same thing, they don't need us to help. So, you know, a lot of what we choose to do is, you know, things that we think are interesting or that other people won't touch. And so, you know, a dog reciting the Book of Revelations, I don't think anyone else would touch it. So we would totally do it.
Right. I was thinking of that as you said that, because it was like, where does a goblin plague doctor go for help? You know, he's going to get turned down by most places.
And I think most people would probably think, okay, this guy's insane. This is goblins, really, like, it's hard to, you know, buy, because obviously we're not familiar with the word goblins, and it just seems like this super weird thing. So
right.
We sort of ran with it.
I think the key with all of this is always the witnesses. And I think that people should take these people more seriously, the crazier they sound. But, you know, that's not a very popular opinion. So we're more than happy to take that work off of other people's hands.
Now, have you run into people where you're like, this is too crazy, like, this is not believable or something like that? You know what I'm saying?
Of course.
You know. Yeah.
Of course. But what's interesting is when all the crazy people start saying the same thing. And
that's
the interesting thing. And I think that happens more than most people realize. I think that a lot of things are thrown out simply because people are like, oh, these people are crazy. But I think if you were to interview a ton of people who everyone said were way too crazy to take seriously, you would start to find very strange patterns that emerge there that I think if studied, you would go to some very, very strange places. It would be a very weird rabbit hole to go down.
That's for sure. Yeah. I was going to say schizophrenia, but...
Well, sometimes, but who's to say that, you know, schizophrenia isn't a symptom of something grander?
Right. No. I'm just imagining, like, you listen to all these people, then at the end of the day, you're like, it turns out they all live in houses with lead paint. So, case closed.
Well, if you figure that out, then you've done a service to the world anyway.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. All right, so that was the goal. Well, tell me this, the alien story, because people, you say how to get abducted by aliens. I don't want to, like, make you guys give away all your sort of, like, lectures and stuff on the show. So, you know, give
me
the parsed down version if you want.
There's only so much we can tell you, but we, several years ago, successfully staged an alien abduction. We got one of our friends abducted by aliens and mentally broke him. It was one of the scariest things I've ever been a party to. It was very traumatic for the person that got abducted. And that's about all I can really say. It was successful, terrifyingly so, and I think we might try it one more time. We might try it one more time, and I think this time it'll be me.
Wow, interesting. Let me lightly probe you. No pun intended.
yeah.
Of course that pun was intended. Of course that was intended.
Of course.
So you know, you don't want to say much about it, but was this sort of like? I don't even need to talk about how the guy got abducted, but, like, was this sort
was,
of like
it was
a...
Real.
Like,
it was real.
I'm willing to go that far, so don't worry about that. I'm not challenging that.
Okay.
You know, it's fine with me. I don't care. what I'm wondering is how you sort of, like, conjured... Was this sort of like a mental thing, or was this like a physical thing where you...
We went to a
like
place...
Because it's one thing to try and call a UFO over with a flashlight or something, but to get it to abduct, it sounds like it requires some kind of mental gymnastics in a sense.
We went to a place where there are common sightings of UFOs. We picked one of the best places we could possibly think of to do it. And there's only so much I can't say too much about how we drew it in. But, missing time, everything. And the strangest part about it is, The person that got abducted can't remember anything about it anymore.
Wow.
It's almost like a natural. And you talk to anybody who's dealt with alien abductees, you know, they'll tell you one of the most common things is that they forget all of it. It just goes away.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's some people who go so far as to say that 1 in 4 people have been abducted by aliens. They just don't remember it because it's a common side effect of it happening. It's something that almost like the great they induce on you is to forget the experience. And sure enough, doesn't remember anything about it anymore.
Hmm. All right.
Yeah.
It's
very
Dana,
strange.
Do you care
very
to
scary.
Add anything to that?
It was very. I will add that it was very stupid and dangerous, and it definitely has impacted pretty much everyone that was involved with it in a big weird way. Like it was a very strange experience for everyone involved. There's like really only so much we can say. Oh, here's what we can say. We give a lecture called How to Be Abducted by Aliens. And if you want to know the answer to it, find out where we're doing a lecture and you can come
you
and
go.
See it and experience the whole thing.
Do you say more than this in the lecture?
There will be a time very soon where people will be able to find the whole thing online. I mean the entire experiment has been filmed. There's video evidence of this happening.
No. Yep. I definitely think, no matter how traumatic it was, you should do it again with Greg.
I want to do it. I really want to do it. I had an experience when I was a kid, and it's been strange because the more we started to look into this, the more I've been having dreams recalling what happened when I was a kid. And I think that's part of the reason I've been terrified. Like, part of the reason we did this experiment to begin with was because I've always been terrified of extraterrestrials. I don't know why. I don't know where it came from. I'd always thought that it was because my grandfather bought me one of these Time Life books, the Time Life Mysteries books on the UFOs.
Those are awesome, yeah.
The foil cover, right?
Oh, yeah.
And it screwed me up. But the more I'm thinking back to it, I'm remembering I saw a UFO when I was a kid. I had snuck outside and I watched something land in the forest behind my house. And I remember it very vividly. I've always thought I was having a dream, but it's so vivid. I've started having recurring dreams about this, and all of a sudden it just stops. And the next thing I know, I wake up in my bed. And so I think part of my draw to investigate this is because I don't know if something really messed up happened that night when I was 7, 8 years old. And so who knows what'll happen? I need a regression session probably.
That's weird. Interesting.
Right?
All right.
Yeah.
That's strange. Dana, do you ever have anything weird like that happen to you?
I have luckily never had an experience like that. I've had a lot of experiences with ghosts, or at least what I think was a ghost. But no, luckily I've never had any encounters with beings from other planets because I think that would be really terrifying.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it depends on the context, I suppose, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
There's a lot of dudes who said they've had really, like, awesome hot sex with, like, hot...
That is true. We were just at Mount Shasta, so...
That would be...
Lots of people who believe that there.
Yeah, I saw a big article today about a couple of young ladies who say they have a whole host of alien babies.
Why not?
Yeah. I don't know.
Galactic child support is awesome.
I guess so. Yeah, they're probably doing all right for themselves, telling everybody
the
about their alien babies.
The exchange rate is fantastic.
Oh, my God. Let me see what else. So tell me, okay, so let's talk about the museum, because I've worked with you, in a sense, on this a little bit, publishing some stuff about the weird museum. How did this... It's a great idea, and I really love it, and I want to be able to come and see it someday. So how did the whole idea come up in the first place? Because it sounds – you must have had a whole bunch of stuff in the – you know, before, and eventually were like, let's just show people this stuff because it's piling up and whatever. But, you know, give me the origin story of the museum.
natural segue. It actually started because of How to Get Abducted by Aliens. We were invited to give a lecture at Scarefest in Kentucky a few years back, and they offered us a booth. And we don't have anything to sell. We didn't have any reason to be at a booth, and so we tried to come up with a reason, you know, what we could do to use it. And we're like, you know what? We have all of these weird artifacts that we've collected over 15 years of weird adventures. So let's make a little ad hoc museum and see what people think. And so we had a couple banners printed up, and people loved it. People were really into it. And one of the reasons they said they liked it is because, you know, there's not really anything like it. There are paranormal museums. Like, everyone knows that John Zaffis has a museum and Lorraine Warren has a museum. But the thing about theirs is you're not allowed to touch any of this stuff. And we're very cool with people touching the stuff. So people were able to handle it. They were able to, at their own risk, of course. And they're able to, you know, use their EMF meters on it. They can test it. And it was such a hit that we're like, okay, well, let's take this seriously. So we started adding more stuff to it, and we got a chest to carry the stuff in that we had blessed by a priest, because some of the stuff that we have is a little touchy sometimes. And before too long, people just started sending stuff to us.
Yeah,
so,
that was very interesting when people started to literally send us their weird, haunted, cursed items. We were like, okay, we will make a home
we'll
for
take
them.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Take them. You know,
oh,
I mean, our big thing is there's a lot of, you know, armchair demonologists out there who would take these things and bind them and bury them, or throw them in a river, or set them on fire, or whatever they would do. And I think that that's a really terrible thing to do when there's so many people out there who want badly to have a paranormal experience. And it's a disservice. If you want to believe that the paranormal is a field of research, it's a disservice to throw this stuff away. So we've given these things a safe place in our home. Some of them have personalities, as strange as that sounds, and we try and cater to them as much as possible. And we don't have any real problems. You know, a lot of people are like, how do you keep that stuff in your house? We really don't have any problems. Everything's, for the most part, behaves. Once in a while, something new comes in. It'll act up for a while, but not many issues. And I think that it's a good thing to have something like this that we can take around to different places and show people these things, and they get an experience that they've been looking for.
Yeah,
Sometimes it's a little scarier than they expect, but they've had their experience.
Have you ever had, you know, those psychics that, like, can touch things? It's a special kind of psychic. Have you ever had
Loads.
One of those touching this stuff?
Yeah, we've had quite a few people. I mean, one of the most popular things that we have in the museum is something that we call the dark mirror. And it tends to be the most, I think it's probably the most negative of all the things that we have.
A lot of people
who are sort of sensitive or psychic, they really dislike it. And they have, a majority of people have pretty bad experiences with it. But, I mean, again, like, we've been bringing all of these things all over the country for almost a year now. And I would say probably about 75% of the people, I would say it's even higher than that, like maybe 80% of the people who see the dark mirror and look into it have some kind of experience. It's crazy.
Weird.
We won't look into it.
Yeah,
I was just going to say, how do you even carry it around then? Like, yeah, okay.
We keep it covered. So that, you know, if someone comes up to the table and they want to look at some of the items that we have, you know, we'll cover it so that they won't catch a glimpse in it if they don't want to. But you know, 80% of the people who do decide to sort of look into it have some kind of really bizarre experience.
Like what? What kind of experiences do they have? Like horrible dreams or what?
A majority of people will experience a lot of the same things. Some people will see their faces sort of melting. Other people have seen their eyes blinking at them when they're not blinking at them. Some people will experience their mouths moving. At one point, we actually brought the mirror to Pennhurst, and this guy came up to the table and, you know, he was sort of like, his girlfriend had brought him there. It was for one of the Nick Groff tour events. And his girlfriend had sort of dragged him along and he wasn't really that necessarily interested in it. And he saw the mirror and we explained to him what it was and you know, that people have had experiences with it. So, of course, he was like, yeah, I'll try it. Wasn't afraid. And he grabbed the mirror and sort of positioned himself in a really good spot and was looking at it for about a minute and a half before he just sort of stopped. And it looked like he was actually going to drop it because he was so startled. Mm. And what he described to us was that he was looking in the mirror. And so again, it's a mirror that is, it's black. It's meant for scrying. So he's looking in the mirror and he can sort of see his own reflection. And what he sees is himself actually peek out from behind himself and then pop back in again.
Oh,
so,
Jesus.
What are some of the other interesting things that people experience?
They're dead bodies?
Dead bodies.
See their own dead faces,
themselves
rotted?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Now,
yeah,
where did this come from? Where did you guys get this thing?
Well, it came, we got it from a woman whose mother was apparently obsessed with it. And her mother had purchased it at a psychic fair here in Ohio. I want to say it was like Columbus. And she was trying to learn Black Mirror scrying. And what happened was she became really weird and obsessed and withdrawn and eventually got to the point where her daughter said, you know, enough is enough. Give me this mirror. And her mother at this point had been keeping it in a closet with a black cloth draped over it, and she broke down and said, I don't know what's wrong with me, but every time I look in this mirror, I only see terrible things. And the terrible things were never elaborated on, so we never knew what they were. And, mm-hmm. It got its name as an accident because we received it like a day or two before we were due to have another display at another event. And we had no tag printed up for it, so we knew very little of its history. And some woman goes, what's this? And she picks it up and she looks into it. And within 30 seconds, she slowly puts it down and says, I shouldn't have done that. That's a dark mirror. I need to go and say a prayer. And she went into the corner of the room and she started praying. And so the name just kind of stuck.
Jesus. Now I want to look
right?
in it. And I'm scared. Oh, man. So how do you not fight the temptation to look at it? I feel like if I had it, I would, like, get drunk and be like, all right, let's get that mirror out and see, you know, do something moronic like
I
that.
Feel like,
so how do you stop yourself?
Probably because, at least I can say from my own point of view, because it's in our house all the time. So I think that if I were to look in it and see something, I probably would be really horrified and would want it to actually be in our house. So for me, that's why I don't look in it. I just choose not to.
I have a more practical reason, and I'm scared of it, but I'm more scared that I won't see anything because I like the story so much and I love to see people respond to it the way they do that I'm afraid I wouldn't see anything, and I don't want that to happen.
That's a very honest answer. I appreciate that. That's good. Because I can totally see, I can see that too, yeah. Where you're like, you have a good run going here. Why, yeah.
Right.
<you know.
laughs> And I mean, there's still a lot of people who look into it and they see absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean,
actually just
yeah.
recently the first person to ever have a positive experience with the mirror happened after hundreds of people have looked into it.
Oh,
a
weird.
A woman at an event in Halloween, in Pittsburgh, she was looking into the mirror and she started crying. And I immediately walked up to her and I was like, are you okay? Do you need to take the mirror? And she just shook her head. She said, no. And I said, what did you see? She's like, nothing bad. She's like, I saw the face of my grandmother, her deceased grandmother. She's like, we look nothing alike. There's no reason why I should have seen her. And she just smiled at me, very kind. And it was very strangely touching and bizarre because no one had a positive experience with it until that point.
Yeah,
that's really weird.
Interesting.
Yeah, I wonder what makes that happen.
I don't know.
It has to all. I'm sure it has something to do with like the mind somehow.
I'm sure. You know, somebody else was like, you know, what if it's what if all it's showing you are reflections of things that are in your head things that you don't want to see, or things that you've been hiding, or things that you were meant to see. Mm. And so maybe that's it. Maybe we just hang around a lot of messed up people.
That's definitely a possibility.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, it could be like that monkey's paw thing where you get what you need instead of what you want or something like that.
There you go.
That's really weird, though. That's really weird. Have you ever had to send anything back where you're like, nah, dude, we don't want your monkey's paw. Thanks for sending it.
Not yet. I mean, you know, it's still early on. We'll see. But, you know, we've got a lot of really bizarre stuff. We just got something in, actually, last week. A couple guys found this strange statue with nails hammered in the eyes and a rope around its neck in a cave in the Catskill Mountains. And when they took it home, they started having all of these terrible things happening. Like, they were finding muddy footprints on the floor, even though all the doors were locked. Really, really strange stuff. And what happened was they'd actually posted about it on Reddit, and someone suggested that they get in touch with us. And the guy sent it to us immediately. And so we've had it for a week. Nothing strange has happened yet. We'll see.
I saw that thing, dude. If I found that in a cave, I would be inclined to leave it there.
You'd probably leave it, right?
I think the guy that we were talking to, I think that it was him that took it. I think it was his friend that took it.
Right.
But I mean, either way,
his skeptic atheist friend was like, "It's all a bunch of bunk. I'm gonna take it home." And this guy's like, "Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it." And sure enough, his friend's not a skeptic anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what it takes.
And then, you know. And then to make matters worse, instead of, like, bringing it back to the cave, the guy's just like, I'm sending it to these guys.
Well, what's funny is everybody said, take it back.
I know, like, 90% of the people were like, just bring it back to where you found it. Just leave it there.
They were too scared. They were way, way too scared to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's fine. I'll take it. That's totally fine. I got a home for it.
Has any of this stuff ever broken? I was thinking about that when you were talking about the mirror. Like, what if some person looked in it and was like, and dropped it, and then who knows what would happen? So is anything
we did.
That's almost happened a few times.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. We had a woman actually at one of the very first events we brought it to who looked in the mirror and had a really bad experience, and then came back maybe half an hour later, super aggressively was like, I need to destroy that thing. Like, give it to me.
Oh, God.
And, I mean, she was.
Well, what happened
like absolutely
was she
had serious.
She was apparently she had done scrying a lot, and one of the techniques that she used is she would put her palm print on the black mirror, and she would remove it, and as it dissipated, she would kind of see whatever sign she was looking for, and her handprint never left. I mean, it was there for 2 hours while this woman she saw something terrible, puts it down. And then immediately picks it back up and tries to rub her handprint off of it, and it wouldn't go away. And she slammed it down, and she walks out. And I mean, I even picked it up and carefully, without looking, tried to erase it, and it wouldn't go away. And she comes back 2 hours later, and she's like, "Where's that effing mirror? I need to destroy that mirror." And as soon as she said it, wouldn't you know, handprint's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa, that's weird.
We've had
a few people who wanted to destroy things on our behalf. Luckily no one's dropped anything, because I would be afraid what would happen.
How did you
never know.
How did you settle this lady down? I don't know what I would do. I don't know what I would do in that situation. So how did you?
I locked it away, and I said, absolutely.
Yeah.
Not. Yeah. Okay.
Absolutely not. And I mean, she didn't really have much of a choice. So.
Yeah.
She kind of stormed off.
My God. Well, I hope she's okay now.
Who knows?
You guys were in a hotel. She probably went and smashed the hotel room mirror or something.
Yeah. Right.
This is
I
good
think
enough.
By the end of the event. If I remember correctly, by the end of the event, she was fine and feeling like maybe she had overreacted a little bit. I know she had gone and phoned some of her friends, to like one of her friends who I don't remember what she said. He was like a
he was like a chaos magician.
A chaos magician. That's what it was.
Oh,
and he sort of talked her down and said, like, you know, you don't have to destroy it. Just smudge yourself or something
just,
like that.
Just threaten it. Just threaten it.
Just threaten it. That'll scare it.
Yeah, exactly.
You just got to put a scare into that mirror. It'll be fine.
Yeah, right. Hey,
now, without, I guess so, yeah. Well, see, that's why I never made it to Chaos Magician. Well, that raises the sort of question that I was like, what kind of conventions are these things that you're going to? Because I've mostly only been to, like, UFO conventions. So what kind of – and it's funny because I was talking about this kind of with Greg Bishop on the show on the last episode,
mm-hmm.
sort of how ghost hunting is – sort of fizzling out a little bit, and it's sort of evolving or devolving or however you want to describe it. It's sort of molting into like this sort of more occulty feel. It's got this occult vibe now is sort of overtaking.
It's interesting. Other people are noticing this. Yeah, for
mm-hmm,
sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't be surprised if we started to see UFO conferences making a really big comeback in the next few years. 'Cause I mean, I know they still happen, but, for some reason, ghost hunting conventions have been huge for the last few years. And I would not be surprised to see UFO conferences come back to that kind of – I mean, because they were huge before ghost hunting conventions. So I think that's coming. But most of the places that we're at are almost strictly ghost hunting or like general paranormal or horror conventions.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really – we'll go anywhere. There's
yeah,
no
we're
reason.
Totally open to
right.
pretty much anything.
It's just that's who books us. So
that's where we go. That's yeah. So that I guess in that sort of environment, you run into people who are sort of more. I wasn't setting up for a diss there. Who are more, you know, occult inclined? Let's say, you know,
the weirdos are our people, and so we welcome them with open arms. The weirder, the better.
Oh yeah, no. Like I said, I wasn't setting up for a diss there. It's I'm just sort of interested in the types of people that are out there and shit. So it's interesting, like you know, people who run into these objects and have some kind of like, oh, it's a scrying mirror. I used to do that. And it's like, whoa, what are you?
Right.
You know,
right.
That's amazing. Like, tell
well,
me
I mean,
more about your history as a scryer, ma'am.
I mean, that's another one of the fun things about going to these events is the people that we meet. Sort of again. Kind of going back to that whole like being open to everything and investigating everything. Some of these people have been doing really cool things that we would have not experienced unless we would have met them. So there are these really great environments where you just get people with really weird interests kind of all coming together to like celebrate their weirdness. And they're usually really fun.
Hmm. Now, would you rather hunt a ghost or a Bigfoot?
Oh, that's...
That's
so hard.
Well, I get the best of both worlds because I believe Bigfoot is a ghost.
That's true.
So
is that true? You really believe that?
I
can
do it at the same time. I honestly, truly, really do believe it. And here's the thing. Let me give you a chance to explain. It sounds crazy at first, but think about this. No one can find a body, yet we're still finding footprints. Sometimes those footprints go into nowhere. Pictures are blurry. Some people can see them. Other people standing right next to them can't see them. I think that what we're seeing is Bigfoot is the ghost of something that used to exist a very long time ago. So, like, you know, a lot of people are like, Bigfoot's interdimensional and he goes through portals. I think you might be kind of right, and I don't think we should throw that entire thing out. But I think it's simpler than that. I think Bigfoot is a ghost. And I think if more people were hunting Bigfoot with ghost hunting equipment, they might be surprised at what they find.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would be interesting.
That's interesting. See, I like that idea a lot because it's like, why not try it? You know, try
it. Yeah, it solved the problem. It solved the problem of not having a body. Like people, they keep thinking they find fur. It's never fur. They keep thinking they find scat, but it's always inconclusive. But they still
continuing to have experiences. Yeah.
And think about it this way. If you saw a ghost, if a ghost made footprints, a regular human ghost made footprints down by a creek bed, you would think nothing of it. You would think that is just some dude walking on the creek bed with his sandals off. But if a giant beast that used to walk the earth a long time ago left footprints, you would notice. And that's exactly what's been happening.
Yeah, and when you think about it, like I'm sure one of the arguments against that would be like, well, how come you never see any ghost animals? But then it's like, if a cat went through my backyard, it very well could be a ghost.
Yeah,
animal. I wouldn't have any
people
idea.
People see ghost animals all the time. There's tons of reports of ghost animals. People just don't really take them all that seriously. But
and
I mean,
like
that's
you
part
said,
of the problem.
If you saw a cat,
right? You'd never think twice about it. And it just speaks to that problem. Bigfoot hunters think ghost hunters are crazy. Ghost hunters think Bigfoot hunters are crazy. They don't ever cross wires. And if they did, they would find a lot in common. I guarantee it.
Now, has
there
you guys always – what's that?
I said, there you go. Bigfoot's a ghost.
Bigfoot's a ghost. That's interesting. Like I said, I don't think I've heard that before, but I've heard Loch Ness Monster's a ghost, so it kind of fits in with that idea.
I believe it. Why not? I think all of this stuff is connected in some way. I think it's all part of the same big weird thing that's going on that we don't have quite figured out yet. And more people need to work together. UFO hunters need to work together with ghost hunters. Bigfoot hunters need to work together with psychics. All these people need to get together. And I think they need to do a big Venn diagram and see where the center is, and that's going to be where everybody should focus. But that probably won't happen.
like our friend John Tenney always says, diversify your weirdness.
Yep.
There you go. I like that.
Good advice.
I like that. Makes me think when Greg was saying, you know, all the different groups need to get together, it's like, I wonder what it says about us as seekers of all this, that it's like, and I know it's sort of a marketing thing, but at the same time, it's like ghost hunters, Bigfoot hunters, UFO hunters. It's like, what are we hunting? What is with the hunting? Why are we doing this?
I know.
Right.
Is it because we've reached such a desperation point where we're like, fuck this, I'm hunting it now. You know,
yeah,
I'm done trying to research it and understand it. I'm fucking going to kill it. You know,
I think that's what it is. I think that people get to this weird, aggressive place where if it's not just happening for them or they haven't experienced something, they tend to get either do one of two things. They either get very, very aggressive or they become skeptical of it. So I agree. I do. I think that hunting is this weird, super aggro word that people use for
yeah,
doing something
I think
that is really just investigating.
Right. I think
curious.
It speaks to the sort of like to maybe an underlying like frustration within the whole milieu of the paranormal, where it's like all this stuff was around like in the 80s. I remember when I first got back into this, you know, I wasn't into it as a kid, but I got back into it like at the turn of the century. That makes me sound like an old man because it sounds cool, but at the turn of the century, I got into it. And I remember getting into it like in my early 20s, and I was like, well, shit, they're close to figuring this stuff out. I mean, it's been 20 years since I looked at it, so it must be.
Yeah, right?
And it never happened. You know, I got into the more I got into it, I'm like, they're not any closer than they were when I was a kid.
Well, and I think if you find, like, on the same note, I think on the note of getting aggressive after you don't get what you're looking for, I think a lot of people do become skeptics. And I think if you look at a lot of the people who are up and coming in prominence in the capital S skeptic community, you'll find that a lot of them were hardcore believers at one point. They were people that set out to find a ghost or to find a Bigfoot, et cetera, et cetera. And then when they realized that they weren't going to find it, or they weren't going to get a television show or whatever the real goal of their search was, they decided, you know what? It's easier to tell all these people they're stupid. And that's kind of what happens.
Yeah, it's almost like a coping mechanism, too, where it's like you deal with the disappointment, you know.
Absolutely.
And then there's, like, other people, like, I know you guys have been in a long time. I've been in this now a really long time. It's like you can go the other direction, I hope. Instead of being super aggressive or being super skeptical, you kind of just reach this, like, zen state where you're like, this thing is bigger than me. You know, it's bigger than me. I don't get it, but I want to be a part of it, man.
Hey, man,
yeah,
we went through a really terrible – we went through a terrible phase, which is part of the reason why, if the words "who forwarded" means anything to anybody, we used to have this website, and it was very critical. I mean, I say we, but it was really me. Dana's always been lovely. I've been very, very mean to a lot of people. and feel very bad about it. And it was mostly the result of that same kind of aggression that you get after you don't get what you're looking for the longest time, and you see other people who claim to be getting what you've been looking for, and you get upset. And I was very mean. I was very mean to a lot of people who I now am very good friends with, and I feel very badly about how I treated them. But it's one of those things where I kind of looked around and I saw the people that I was attracting around me by being a skeptic, a capital S skeptic. I saw the kind of attitudes that these people had and what I was, in a lot of ways being associated with, and it mortified me. And I made a decision right then and there. I said, I'm not going to take myself so seriously anymore. I'm not having fun anymore. And the minute that I changed, we changed the name of Who Forted. We got rid of the baggage. It's Weak and Weird now. And we decided, let's actually have fun with this. The crazier it is, the more let's give it a go.
And I mean,
having
just having that
blast.
And I think approaching the subject matter with that kind of thought process opens you up to more experiences anyway.
Oh, absolutely.
So,
yeah.
Absolutely.
I think that's just a gimme, really.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. It's like you can't hate watch the paranormal. It doesn't work that way.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, you can, but you'll be miserable.
Right.
You'll
absolutely
be miserable. Because the thing is, I think that what people are missing is the paranormal, the way that you need to really investigate the paranormal is subjectively, because paranormal experiences are all very subjective. You talk to any witness who's ever had a strange experience, whether it's with a UFO or an abduction or a Bigfoot or a ghost, whatever, it's very subjective. And people who think about the world in a very mathematical way are not going to be happy with that. They're not going to accept subjective evidence. Anecdotal data, they're not going to accept it. And I respect, that's fine, but that's the wrong way to be going about the paranormal. If you really want to investigate the paranormal, you have to do it subjectively. You have to dive in. You need to do a magic spell. You need to go and be Bigfoot bait. You need to try and get abducted by aliens. That's the way you're going to get some interesting answers to questions. But people are very scared of doing that because I think innately people are very, very worried about looking or feeling silly. And I think once you get over that idea of what other people are going to think, you're going to go some very interesting places. And that's kind of the point that we had to get to, where we stopped caring what anybody else thought about what we were doing and just had fun. And we're getting places. We're finding interesting things because we're having a good time doing what we're doing.
We got to spread this stuff around. Let's put it on the internet.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Great heavens. What kind of radio show is this?